Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another San Diego Soundbites episode, and in this one, I'm talking to Chris James. He's the writer of the graphic novel Sons of Chaos. It tells sort of a fictionalized version of the true story of the Greek Revolution. And Chris was a really interesting guy to talk to. This is a project he's been working on for about 10 years. So to see it finally come to fruition is really exciting. Chris, he really did his homework. He traveled a lot. He went to the actual places where these events took place. And, you know, not only did he write about the story, he really went over there and, you know, kind of absorbed the atmosphere, the environment where these things took place. And even though it was, you know, hundreds of years later, there's something to be said for that. So it's a beautiful book. It's gorgeous to look at. Even if you don't get the oversized hardcover and check out the beautiful art, I encourage you to pick it up digitally and read it that way. It's an interesting story. You'll hear Chris and I talk in the conversation we had about how we can learn so much from our past. And a lot of times it's interesting to look back and see that we're making a lot of the same mistakes we've made in the past. It seems to be human nature, right, to want to feel included and to belong. And a lot of, you know, when you strip back all the trappings of politics or what have you, that's what it all comes down to. And in that way, I suppose it is human nature, and we can sort of never get away from that. And we find ourselves throughout the course of human history making the same mistakes over and over. So what Chris's book, Sons of Chaos, really is it's a snapshot in time of a situation in a certain country, in a certain part of the world, where these sort of tensions and this desire to belong sort of through various circumstances boiled over, if you will. And again, I think it's an interesting story, and we can learn a lot from it, especially now when there seems to be so much divisiveness in the world. So it was great to meet Chris and to talk to him. We sat and chatted a little bit after the conversation, the interview was over, and got to, you know, learn a little bit more about him. He's had, as I said, a very interesting life. So glad to see that he's chronicling that, channeling some of his experiences into these types of stories. And it's really worthwhile, and a gorgeous hardcover book to look at if you want to pick it up in print. So as always, thanks for listening, everybody. Really appreciate the support. I'll go ahead and play the interview with Chris James now. Thanks to Chris for taking the time, and we'll talk to you next time. This is Jace coming to you live from the 50th anniversary San Diego Comic-Con Sunday morning, here with writer Chris James, talk about his project from DW, and talk a little bit about the importance of story too, because I very much want to get your opinion on the way I look at story. But before we get to that, why don't you let everybody know about your project with IDW?
Yeah. Well, it's a extremely heavy to carry, large, double sized, massive 200 page graphic novel. It's called Sons of Chaos. It surrounds a revolution that most people don't know that much about. It happened in 1821 in Greece, and it stimulated the fall of the Ottoman Empire and defined Western Europe. But it's not really just, it's like you say, it's all about a story, and really the story I used on this could have been put on any war or any circumstance, and I think that's the goal. You have to build out the story much more so than the event.
And how long have you?
Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was going to ask, how long have you been working on the project? It really, I mean, you're so passionate about it. It's why I wanted to talk to you about this book. It really seems like this is your baby. It's something you've been working towards for a long time, right?
Sure. Yeah. Like from the beginning of the concept until now, it's been almost 10 years. So yeah, it's been lingering for quite a while. Yeah.
And beautifully painted. Who's the artist on the?
Ale Aragon. He's from Argentina. He's got a bunch of books that just came out this month, actually. Magically, they all sort of synchronously came out at the same time.
And you mentioned it's about real-life events. And I think that there's something to be said about looking back at our history.
Yeah.
And looking back at the stories we tell. But I also think that a lot of people don't realize that the Ottoman Empire was still around. I mean, this isn't
It's a minute
ancient
ago.
Greece. Right,
it's
exactly.
A minute ago. And right now we're still fighting the same war. You know what I mean? Like, it's just positioned differently. And the slogans are a little bit different, but it's still, like, the same. The West uses the East as a justification to keep our infrastructure going.
Right.
Right? And so that was just the same thing. Like, even though it doesn't hit on this so much in the story, but when you do the research, you realize the West doesn't really care, right? Like, mostly, it's like, hey, are we okay? Oh, what's going on over there? All right, well, what happened is as the Greeks started to revolt against the Ottomans, the London Stock Exchange threw up a fund. And it was doing really well, as the Greeks did well. But then the Greeks turned on each other as they started to push back the Ottomans, and a civil war broke out. So then the Ottomans just let them kill themselves for a while, swept back in, and took back everything that, you know, wiped out all the progress that the Greeks had made. At which point the fund started to get affected and not do so good. So that's when the West and the UK started giving loans to the Greeks. And then the Greeks won the war, and the Greeks just paid off those loans about in the last 10 years.
Yeah, it's so interesting, because like you said, I mean, in the West, we really don't care until it affects us. We're like, oh, they do what they do, whatever. But like I was saying earlier about story, I want your opinion on this. I think story matters so much. I think that it's something that brings us together. And I think you can look back at a particular period of time for society, and through the lens of the fiction they create, understand so much of that society, whether it's Roman Empire, Greece.
Totally.
Right?
But the hard part is that you have to kind of discern what the real story is and who's telling the story. Because no one typically tells the story from an objective standpoint, right? It's the dumb thing of, like, yeah, who won the war tells the history, but it's true. Like, As I started to try to figure stuff out about this war, there wasn't a lot of resources that were in English. And as I started to get them, that was translated, you started to realize things didn't add up in the different stories, and it depended whose agenda you were reading. And we have this delusional reality that, like, the things that we get told mean something. However, think about just between your friends when you reiterate what happened in a night, and the stories sometimes add up, but usually everybody's version is different. Well, it's 10 million times worse when you're trying to figure out what really happened in history. So we don't really know. We have this delusional sort of naivety thinking we do.
Yeah, that's a great point. I have never thought of it in that way. But basically what you're saying is context matters, right? And it's hard to know. And I think you're also right in thinking that we have this sort of prejudice, I guess you'd say, where, well, if it got written down, that must be the...
Totally. I your whole life, if something was in writing, if it was something that was in a book, I just thought, of course, that's the truth. And I think young people probably still think that. And the worst part is now they're getting satiated with things in writing that anybody can write.
Yeah, well, it's on the internet. It's got to be true,
right? Totally, yeah. I mean, if something was like... in writing in a book, it had to be true. If something was on TV, it was like doubly true, right? And now, could you imagine if you thought anything that you saw when you turned on, whether, I don't care anymore, whether it's CNN or Fox News, I don't see much that I can trust off of the surface, you know?
Right, yeah, it really does feel like it's worse than ever, because now all of a sudden the truth's not even the truth. That's the story we're being told. Well, the truth isn't even, what?
Right, and that's now the new strategy is like, And now with all of this new, like, deep fake videos, now you can see yourself on video and say, no, that wasn't me. Maybe it was, but maybe it wasn't.
And I never said that.
Yeah, totally. So there's really no platform anymore that you can actually trust. So I think, coming back to this story, the core of the story that I focus on here is the agenda of the Pasha, of the Ottoman side that was placed in the north, the region of Epirus, which is around the north, Ioannina in Greece. So ironically, this guy was such a badass. He was, and once I started reading this guy's story, it was hard not to tell it, because he really is the modern day real life Joker character, but at the expense of you know? And so he went to the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire and he was like, hey, I want to go run Greece. And nobody trusted this guy, and they were like, no, that's cool, thanks, no. So he goes anyway and says, hey, here I am, Sultan told me to be here, and just started cleaning house, and everybody was so intimidated by him, even Sultan was like, just let him be there. He's down there, nobody cares. So then he starts manufacturing realities with the other pashas on their team. and working his agenda, which no one really knew, and that's kind of where I started searching out, is what was his agenda. And it turns out it's his psychology based on youthful events, and somehow he regurgitates his value based on kind of fulfilling the equations that he couldn't with his parents. You know, so it's the same dumb story that we're all doing, but on the scope that's massive. And because he had an agenda that was different than the Ottoman Empire's agenda, in my opinion, after postulating of breaking down all of these things that I was reading, you start to see, like, oh my God, if this guy hadn't had been focused on his own agenda, it wouldn't have maybe opened up the holes that allowed the Greeks to kind of make progress. So I could be totally wrong, but that's what made sense to me and my delusional.
Well, first of all, that's really interesting, and it sounds like, and let me know if this is true, is that our way, like, as a reader, is that how it's relatable? It's, like you said, the same story that we're all trying to, is that our in, you feel?
This is, yes. So I think, like, what you're saying, you're asking me if that story is in the book?
Or, right, well, I know the story's in the book, but it, as a reader, do you think that's how, that's our in to understanding the story? That's how we relate? Because, you know, we always like to relate story to our own selves,
our own personal
life.
I think for me, okay, you know, you write something, and even when you think there's nothing about you in it because it's such a foreign thing that you have to write for an assignment or something, in retrospect, you look back and you go, oh, I didn't even notice, like, I was talking about myself and my hidden, you know, problem or obsession with something
that I don't even admit to.
And so with this book, it was totally that. I thought, oh, there's nothing, this is all, this is their stories, and this is this, and this is shit I made up. And then I took a step away and I looked back and I went, oh my God, I didn't totally notice. My psychology, you know, it's really all of these people are in a different circumstance, super vulnerable, looking to validate their self-worth, to know that they're okay and that somebody loves them. But on a grand scheme for some and on a small scheme for others. So like Marcos, the lead character, is dying to get his father's acceptance. And just trying to know that he's good, and his father's a leader, so there's that whole imposition of, like, and he's reluctant. He doesn't want to be a lead. He's more of a cerebral person that is more about education and growth and thoughtfulness. And he comes from a family of, like, we have to kill everyone to stay alive. And so he's got an internal battle and conflict with exactly what his father is and what he is supposed to be. The expectations that he delusionally, like, feels that are imposed upon him. So I think the in every different way, there is the psychology of each one of the characters is another one where the relatability factor comes down to, like, I think we're all kind of quietly hiding the reality. Like, why do you do what you do? Well, you're into it, but why are you into it? Well, because you got to be, you know, I'm drawn to it. But if you break down the equation, it all comes back to the same thing. I want to be loved, and this helps me look cool, or this helps me, like, make money, and this helps me get successful, and if I'm successful, then these people will like me, and I'll have a better life. I want a good life, and if you don't have people that like you, you know, so it's just the same equation of, am I enough, and how can I try to be more enough? And that's
that's a universal story,
universal concept.
Now, we talked about how long you've been working on this. It's really your baby. Did the story in your mind, did it take that long to develop, or did it change as you learned more? You know, we talked about the truth and how it sounds like you really tried to read all the angles because, like you said, there isn't, I mean, who knows what the actual events are. So, like, how, talk to me a little bit about the development, the gestation time.
All right, so I started, like, okay, so it was about 10 years ago. Initially, it was getting an assessment on what was really, like, you buy the book that says, like, The Greek War of Independence, you know, and it's like a thing you buy when you're in Greece, and it's an old book that was made 40 years ago that they've just keep selling at those little gift shops.
Right.
And so you start out at that level, and then you start to go, okay, those are broad strokes. And so by the time I got through broad strokes, mid strokes, you know, a little bit tighter strokes, I was probably 8 months into research, at which point I went to Greece, And in a period of about 5 or 6 weeks, I covered, you know, 6,000 kilometers in a period of days, just driving. There was times where I was on the very southern tip of Monemvasia, which is in the south of the Peloponnese, and I was in the ocean swimming, looking out at the place, trying to get a sense of what it would look like to be attacking, and it was cold. It was December, I'm the largest whiny, non-masculine human when it comes to not warm water, and it's not even like kind of lukewarm. It needs to be like significantly comfortable. So I went from there, drove all the way up north to Yeneena in one day, and got stuck on a mountain road where an ice boulder had blocked the road, and had to drive back 3 hours, you know. So then on the way back, I was like, okay, I'm not getting that way. So then I went to this other town where one of the like most known icons from the war is a guy named Odysseus Andrautsis. And he actually had lived in a cave for a while this was going on, and so I went and climbed up that cave, you know. So over the short period of time, I was running all over the country and having like, I needed a visual awareness of the terrain.
To make it real.
Right. So I got that understanding. So now I'm a year in, and then after that, I started really going into deeper levels of research for another 4 or 5 months until I started building out these books of timelines and every character I could find from that was involved. And a map that said, here's 10 years leading up, here's the 10 years of the revolution, and here's 10 years after. So I just basically built way too much materials and had this vat of shit that no one ever needs. And the worst part is the more you do that, the more you realize there's too many streams that you're not going to figure out.
Right.
And the problem became, okay, what story do you tell that you can fit into a format of this length that gives a nice introduction to the war? Mm. So now I do that. Then I broke the outline into a first draft screenplay. Well, once I figured the story, I wrote an outline. The outline was way too long. Then I wrote a screenplay, and that was way too long. And so it was year four that I had a very acceptably length, still too long version of a screenplay. And I said, I want this to have a life. And if it just lives on in a script that's challenging to make in my computer, I will not feel very happy about my results, and that's when it diverted here. So then the whole process of the book came. So the whole thing, and that was another process which we would need way too much time. Don't care about.
Right.
But yeah.
But it's great that it's here. The art is absolutely amazing. I can't wait to check it out myself. I think, you know, like we talked about, you know, truth matters, putting ourselves in seeing ourselves in story, especially when it's something based in history, matters, and the story can really bring us together. So I'm super happy that it's here at IDW.
it's a beautiful book.
So congrats on
thanks, brother.
Kind of reaching this milestone. Do you have any other projects that you have coming up that you want to mention?
I have a few things. I did kind of the similar version. I developed a screenplay around a true story for a movie I've got in development, and it's a true story about a kid named Joe Hoagland who was born in the late 80s with a congenital heart defect. He wasn't supposed to survive. He did survive. By the time he was 3, he was having his third open heart surgery, and he had a full right hemisphere stroke and went paralyzed on his left side. So now he was a 3-year-old that couldn't move, and he had a heart problem. His mom was extremely relentless, tried everything. And basically, long story short is, nobody expected him to survive, and he ended up having a full recovery that was stimulated by his relationship with a dolphin.
Wow.
So that's the story that I'm working on now. So it's kind of the antithesis of like murder, rape, slaughter, your mother killing women while they're giving birth. You know, Sentica is a very not gentle story. And this one's like the opposite. It's like this beautiful, it's like my version of E.T. I think I was more obsessed as a kid with E.T. than any other movie, probably for that period of year or two.
Right.
So I think I've always wanted to make a version of my own, and this is the closest thing, but instead of like a, you know, funny looking finger on a troll, it's a dolphin. And a true story.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's so cool. Well, let our listeners know where the best place is to find out about your work, social media, online.
ChrisJames.com, and it's JAYMES is my website. And it's the same. If you put that name on Facebook or Instagram or anything else, you'll find me. And the sonsofchaos.com is the book. So, you know, pretty much all the
find it there?
Typical things. Yeah, pretty straightforward. ChrisJames.com, sonsofchaos.com. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, man.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Great to talk to you.
Yeah.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.